Good morning. It is 7:43 here on the Mighty 690, and time for our Green Setup program brought to you by Green Acres here in Coffeyville. Joining us from K-State Extension Wildcat District, we have Horticulture Agent Kenny Dodson. Good morning, Kenny. How's it going?
It's going pretty good. How are you doing?
Doing well. So, albeit a little lack of sleep here with the late night election-wise, but we're practicing here for the general election.
Mm-hmm, so. Mm-hmm. It'll come again.
That's right. So, of course, we didn't have anything for the K-State extension positions here on this one, as you know, that'll be, I know, coming up later. But I know that as we get into our time together today, you've got a couple of different topics you'd like to talk about. And, of course, we've got those gardens are kind of being tested right now in this summer heat.
Oh, yeah. So I get a lot of people never call me to brag about what they've got. They never say, wow, here's some beautiful pictures. Here's some wonderful things I just want to show off. It's always, hey, what's wrong? What's wrong? Everything's dead. What's wrong? And usually it's environmental. That's like going to be the number one for most things. Sometimes it is a bigger problem. But especially when I want to talk about the topic for today, which is going to be fruits and aka vegetables, depending on what you're growing, and the garden, there's going to be a lot of problems, and most of that is going to be what's going on right now with the weather. So when people tell me, why don't I have any of this? When my mom says, why am I not getting my tomatoes? I say, oh, that's because it's 110, 115 with index, and there's been like no good water for a while. So there's plenty of problems that can arise in the landscape, in the environment, in the growing conditions that just don't work well with what you're trying to do. And it's just a matter of waiting it out. Obviously, when we take care of our plants, we want to make sure they're nice and happy and healthy and watered and prepared for that weather. But just even with the right conditions and the right healthy plant, they're still not going to produce fruit. So that's my topic for today, is fruit and why they're fruiting, why they're not fruiting, what's wrong with the fruits, all that situation. And I guess I'll preface by saying, I'll talk about fruits. That means I'm going to talk about zucchinis and squashes and tomatoes because they all come from flowers. So I have to call them fruits because, you know, if the flowers get deformed or if the flowers get herbicided, then you won't have any fruits or vegetables.
So when we take a look at some of the, you know, probably the main concern is, you know, well, why aren't they fruiting?
Yeah, that's one of the biggest calls I'm getting right now. And that's, it can have many problems, but typically the big thing is no plant, well, most plants are not going to be happy enough to flower. They're not going to try to reproduce. They're not going to have the energy for that when it's over 100 degrees. Actually, the cutoff range for like tomatoes, even one of our heat loving crops, tomatoes tend to not put out fruits or develop fruits or flowers over 95 degrees. And obviously, in Kansas summer, we tend to get over 95 degrees pretty regularly. And then there's also things like beans and all those like things that don't even take the summer heat. They should be gone and done by now. We can also talk about some things that you'll plant now for later, but that's a whole different topic. We're talking about the things that are growing right now. So the last time I was here, I know we had mentioned those massive pumpkins. And that's definitely a chore, definitely a task that you're working towards. But hopefully you got that pollination done before the summer heat, because even things like your squashes and your pumpkins and your zucchinis, they don't work as well in the heat, especially when it's over 100 degrees.
So on the, you mentioned the tomatoes, and I have got some tomatoes right now. They are flowering, but they still have not set fruit yet. It's like they'll flower, and then the kind of flowers will kind of die. They'll turn brown and just die, and nothing really happens. So what's going on with that?
That's probably going to be my assumption is heat stress, because like I said, usually they're not putting the energy into flowers or fruit. Sometimes they may have caught a cold spell or a decent spell, or they had enough energy to flower. But then they say, oh, wait a minute, it got out to 115 with the heat index today. I'm not going to worry about that. So a lot of times when you come to the heat stress and the problems with setting fruit is going to be either flowers dying off, flowers maybe starting to get pollinated, and then the fruit kind of shriveling up as well, or maybe even have like a halfway deformed fruit, but it just completely stops and stalls because it got aborted, essentially.
So that even if the fruit starts, it can sometimes just kind of stall out, like you said.
Uh-huh. And then the biggest thing is the flowers, though, because like I mentioned, most people don't even see flowers, or like you mentioned, most people will get a flower that doesn't produce anything. And sometimes that can be a pollination issue. Most things are pretty well wind pollinated, sometimes animal pollinated, insect pollinated. Sometimes those summer squashes, if we're not doing it by hand to craft that perfect pumpkin, they also need a little bit of pollination help as well. And that can be us, that can be bugs, But at the same time, most of those bugs are not going to be very active in the middle of the heat of the day.
Sure. No, that makes sense. So what else should we know when it comes to some of these fruit this time of year?
Well, you mentioned your tomatoes, and so this is the part where I'm going to ask you,
yes,
how's your crop update?
Yeah, so I mentioned that on the tomatoes. The tomatoes still haven't actually gotten anything out of the tomatoes, even though they are starting to flower. But I actually do have some little watermelons.
Oh.
So there were volunteers from last year that kind of did their own thing, so I let them go. So some of them are about the size, close to the size of a baseball or so, but they're mini watermelons, and I guess my question would be, how do I know when a watermelon is ready?
Oh, that's a great question. So it can be a little variety dependent because there are some like the lighter colored ones that are just naturally lighter in color. My general recommendation is, and this is also kind of apt for store-bought watermelons too, typically when a watermelon ripens, whether it's on the vine, if it's laying on the ground like they usually do because they're so heavy, they'll start to get that white or yellow spot on the bottom. Typically a white spot still means it's still pretty early in the development. A yellow spot on your own or the grocery store one means it's been ripening for a while on the ground. That can be good, can be bad if it got, you know, a little moldy or damp or wet. But as it starts to mature and get those good colors, so like I mentioned, the varieties can be brighter, darker. Typically, if it starts to show those stripes decently well, then that's going to be your indicator that, oh, this thing's getting close to ready. Size is also something. If, you know, it's getting to a size you want, if it still looks way too small, then that's probably way too early. But also you got a mini there.
Sure.
Sugar baby? Or?
It's a bush variety of some kind, so I think that's maybe what it is.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're I think they're a little, like, one step bigger than ornamental, essentially.
But, yeah, color is going to be one of my biggest indicators, and that's just because if it doesn't look like it's a ripe watermelon, if it doesn't have those dark green stripes, then it's probably not ready yet. And then also that spot on the bottom. You can also, when you're in the stores, you can pick it up and thunk it. So the people doing that are not crazy when you see them doing that. They're thunking it because they sound hollow or not so hollow. Hollow tends to mean a lot of water, sometimes not as much sugar content. Not as hollow tends to mean it's pretty dense. In a way that could just mean not very juicy fruit, or it could mean that it's actually pretty well developed.
Now, some of these, I know that experience with things like cucumbers, I mean, everyone, if they've got a lot of cucumbers, will always have that one that got away that just kind of, you forgot about or didn't see, and then it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Do watermelons tend to do that, or do they just kind of max out sometimes?
Watermelons tend to just grow to the size they need to fill. Almost anything in that family, it's the vine. It just grows crazy. Watermelons tend to put a lot of energy into their fruits, though. So depending on how many plants you have, if you just have the one plant, you can let it grow crazy. But once it starts to get a couple of fruits on it, it's going to start pumping a lot of energy into those fruits.
Gotcha. Makes sense. But yeah, I know that we'd always run into those cucumbers, but they didn't. Once they got really giant, they don't usually tend to taste very good either.
Yeah, and that's why. So speaking of the county fairs before we were airing, there's a lot of things you can put into a county fair, and even one county fair coming up, or an interstate fair coming up. And so when we're judging those zucchinis and those cucumbers, sometimes the really big, really, really big fruits look impressive, but they tend to get hard, they tend to get very tough, hard to eat, or they get like these massive seeds because they're no longer the tasty fruit we want, they're the reproductive organ trying to survive.
Sure. Sure, it makes sense. We're talking with Kenny Dodson here from K-State on some tips here for our plants this summer, especially when it comes to fruiting. Obviously, you kind of said for most of it, it's just going to be kind of a waiting game.
Mm-hmm. It'll be waiting. It'll be hoping the weather's good, trying to maintain the plant's health as much as you can, keeping them watered. You obviously can't control the climate too much, but if you're able to give them some afternoon sun, I always sound like a hater towards the afternoon sun, but in the middle of July, I think it's warranted, especially if you're like growing on a patio like some people are. It can get really hot next to your plants, and that's another reason why they get so stressed out when you're like, it's not too bad. I'll spend like 10 minutes out here max, but then they're also on the concrete. They're also maybe in a dark container, and that black plastic's absorbing the heat. And then they need some water, too. So if you're able to give them some water, ideally on the root zone, we never try to water the entire plant because the entire plant doesn't need water, just the roots. That's why they always recommend watering low, watering with drip tape, irrigation of some kind. But then that watering can also be a problem, too. It's great, and all plants need it. Please water. I always recommend the deep, long, and frequent watering because it helps develop a good root system. But sometimes when it's super hot outside, they need pretty consistent water because they're using up so much water so frequently. And that's something especially common with tomatoes. Tomatoes, as you're growing, they've got a very, very dense root system, and they pull up a lot of water. Tomatoes, you can water them basically every single day. And that sometimes is needed because you've probably seen cracks on your fruit. And people also ask me, why are my fruits cracking? And usually, if you think about it, the tomato skin, it's a little tough. It's a little thick and rubbery. It's not like a rind, but it's still tough enough to like keep everything in, sometimes interfere with your teeth. And so when that skin gets kind of dry, it toughens up, it shrivels down a little bit, and then it gets a big batch of water. Sometimes that's a rainstorm. Sometimes that's, I forgot to water it for 2 days. I'm going to dump a whole 5-gallon bucket on it. All that surge of water, the tomato is great at picking up all that water because it's got a very dense root system. And so when it pulls in all the water at once, it causes the fruit to swell up, which could be good if the skin weren't so tight. The skin splits, we get cracks, and usually I tell people, Americans are pretty judgy when it comes to food just because we are and we can be, but those cracks don't tend to hurt the fruit internally, just externally. And they tend to heal over decently, but they also invite room for pests and diseases to get in. Once the skin's been cracked or maybe some juices come out, then the bugs will really start to get on there. And that's why tomatoes crack. That's why they're not a bad thing. They can be avoided. They kind of just happen every year, though, and they're not inedible still.
That's a good reminder. Even though they might look a little ugly, you could still go ahead and eat them there. So, Kenny, as we wrap up this segment, anything else you'd like to share with us here for this segment?
I'll just talk about a few more crop deformities.
Yeah.
Your cucumbers, if they're not pollinated well, that's why they get those funky, weird, skinny waists or pinched tips. That tends to be a pollination issue. Tomatoes, the big kind especially, they can get really deformed and weird. They can get that big, long brown spot on the bottom that's not usually blossom end rot. That's just like that that dry spot on the bottom. And the more tissue you're working with, the more tissues can go wrong. They can get folded and twisted and weird. There's a problem called cat facing that if you tune into the Mighty 690, you'll probably hear me mention later in the week. But yeah, sometimes the ugly fruits just didn't develop well. They are generally still edible. If you're cutting them up or canning them, they're still edible. But take care of them. Survive the heat. See what you can do.
And as we, you know, start to look forward to the fall, which will be here before we know it, just real quickly, any maybe top easy to grow things that you might suggest if people want to put in a few like vegetables for the fall?
Absolutely. So I think the easiest thing to do, especially around August, September, is going to be planting some garlic. It's not recommended to use the things from the store, but you can try it if you want. If you're able to get like a good garlic seed head, so like a batch of cloves that from a reputable source, whether that be a friend, some garlic you've grown last year, or maybe the grocery store, you can plant that stuff now. And I tell people it's like a baby. You give it about 9 months, you let it overwinter, it's like a bulb, and you let it grow up next year around the time it starts to put on flowers or it starts to get a little yellow. Harvest it like an onion. But people grow garlic in the spring and they're like, oh, it didn't get very big. I'm like, yep, it's like a baby. It needs 9 months.
That's great. So something to try perhaps if you're looking to do a little bit of some planning for next year.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Well, Kenny, we'll, when we come back, what are we going to be talking about on our next segment?
You mentioned fall, and there's always the fall army worms to look at. We've got reports of them in like around the Sedgwick County area. And then I haven't seen any yet, but grubs are always a concern.
All right, that's coming up as we continue our Green Side Up program, which is brought to you by Green Acres right here in Coffeyville. We'll have a check of news and weather and then get you back into our program here in just a few moments on the Mighty 690. Kenny Dotson joins us once again, and we do, of course, have a few more horticulture-related topics to talk about. Good morning once again, Kenny.
Good morning. Hello.
All right. So we previewed it just a little bit, and it seems like there's always some sort of pest that's trying to eat our gardens, and you've got yet a few more to talk about here for us here today.
Yes. Like I mentioned, people call into me and ask about their problems, what's going wrong. They never show me the good stuff. They never show me their nice, healthy lawns. They never show me, you know, this thing worked really well. Sometimes they tell me they have a problem, and I go out there. I'm like, oh, your fescue actually looks really good. Good job. But we talked about weather stress, heat stress, pretty bad. Talking about fescue, heat stress, pretty bad. But along with that, there's also the external issues, such as pests. And it's almost always pests. Sometimes it's disease, but like I mentioned, a lot of times for gardens and stuff like that, it's a lot of environmental problems. Same for lawns, but lawns also tend to get a bunch of pests. And because it's not 20 different fruits and veggies, you've got your few types of grass, and they're either green or they're brown. Sometimes environmentally, sometimes because of bugs. And the two I'm going to talk about today, right now, are going to be fall armyworms, which obviously sound like they're active in the fall, but they really kick up in August and September. And then also grubs, because grubs are another big one that no one really notices, because you see them flying around as June beetles and May beetles, and you're like, oh, that's a nasty beetle. I wonder what it's eating. Usually not much, sometimes a few things, a few leaves, but the bigger problem is when they're still young, before they turn into that beetle, they're underneath your lawn, and they're chewing up the lawn. So, which would you prefer to start with, James? Armyworms or grubs?
Let's get the armyworms out of the way here.
Oh, gosh. So I mentioned in the last segment, they have been reported in Sedgwick County. I believe that's an updated, accurate count. I've not seen any reports. I've not heard anybody talk about them yet in southeast Kansas. I'm sure they're here. I'm sure they're somewhere. Obviously, the biggest problems is almost all caterpillars start out very small. So those itty-bitty armyworm caterpillars are going to be almost invisible, very hard to see. The first thing you'll probably see is damage to your plants, to your grass leaves. And obviously, I'm not the crops guy. They can hit your corn and your wheat pretty bad. But I'm just going to talk about lawns here because they tend to be a grass feeder, like corn and wheat, but also all the lawns we have, which is another reason why if you're living next to a field or some kind of farming situation, if you've got a nice healthy lawn, keep an eye out for armyworms in your lawn as well as the field. So when they're still young, they're nigh invisible, they're very small, and they get bigger and bigger, and then the damage gets worse and worse. So when they're still young, the damage you're going to be looking for is what they call window panes, which essentially is the bladed grass will have a small little skinny section straight up and down along the grass blade that is kind of transparent, because the insect is still so small, the mouth parts are still just feeding on some of those tissues, not the whole tissue, so they don't tend to chew off the whole leaf or chew up the whole leaf. That's when you'll start to see those window panes. And right now is a decent time to look for that. Also, in a few months, the damage tends to get pretty bad in September, October, and usually gone before December, or at least it's already been done by December. So those armyworms are out and about. You can scout either by just looking at your random grass blades as you want. They tend to feed when it's still cool, like I mentioned last segment. The heat tends to deter most things, most living things, and so typically they'll feed in the early mornings, sometimes in the late afternoons, but they'll feed in the early mornings. They'll come up, usually out of the ground, out of the crown of those grasses. They'll go up, they'll feed, make window panes. As they get bigger, they'll start to chew holes into the leaves, and then they'll crawl back down, usually as it starts to heat up, 10 a.m., noon. So another good scouting method for armyworms is to take a bucket or some kind of cup, and you can actually mix some dish soap, because most bugs hate dish soap, and you can get that dish soap, 2 to 3 teaspoons per gallon of water. You can even just buy a gallon of water or fill up a gallon of water, put some teaspoons of dish soap in there, mix it all up, and then pour it down in the grass in a certain area, usually like a foot by foot, 2 square feet area, and then flood the ground with that dish soap water, and that should cause all the armyworms to come out to the tops of the leaves. Typically, if we start to see a couple armyworms per square foot or per small area, that's a big concern, because if they're right there, they're probably also everywhere else.
And we're not too concerned about that dish soap causing issues for the grass?
Typically not. It depends on how strong you make it, but like that 2 tablespoons, a pretty dilute mixture is good. You can also water it back through if you're really worried. It doesn't tend to do too much damage. But so when you start to see them, now is a great time to start applying sprays, dealing with them, because they become a bigger problem eventually. So you might as well deal with them at some point. And so I'm going to list some of these active ingredients, and they're actually going to be pretty similar for grubs. There's actually one that is, I'm not sure if the same chemical listed for armyworms is also listed for grubs. You can always check your label to see what crops and what insects it covers. But so usually the preventative treatments are going to be something called chlorantraniliprole. which is a big, fancy long term. The trade name on the bag usually for that, for grubs, is called GrubX. And then there's some treatment options, which are, I've mentioned the pyrethroids, the things that end in thrin. So there's things like bifenthrin, lambda cyhalothrin. There is something called trichlorfon, which is actually the same chemical as Dilox, another grub preventer. But those thrins are going to be the ones that basically kill on contact. That's the thing that's like, oh, I see armyworms now. I have a spray that kills armyworms. It also tends to kill quite a few other bugs. If you notice, like your ortho tends to have some kind of bifenthrin in it. Maybe, there's so many thrins. There's a lot of thrins out there in the insecticide market. But those are the things you're going to spray for armyworms, especially if they're listed for armyworms.
Are we doing like in a pressurized sprayer? Or is this something that hooks up to the hose? Like, how are we actually putting this maybe on a lawn?
If you're able to get like one of those fancy little ride-around wing sprayers to cover a wider area quicker, that'd be great. Otherwise, you can just use a pressure backpack sprayer, wide nozzle. It's a insecticide, so the wider the nozzle or the smaller the droplet size, the more it mists, the more it can spread. And so especially if you have a thing like a flower garden, a pollinator garden, obviously you're not going to try to spray, kill all the bugs, chemicals next to your pollinator garden. But that's what you're going to spray for armyworms. And then we're going to talk about grubs.
Yeah.
So you want to talk about armyworms first? Was that satisfying?
Yeah, I think that's good. That's good.
So. Okay. And then we've got grubs.
Yes.
So like I mentioned before, people tend to see the damage first, especially when it comes to armyworms, especially when it comes to grubs. The armyworms at least get bigger, so you can eventually see those. Oh, gosh. I should probably go back and talk about the armyworm the way they look.
Yes,
because it stuck with you from last year.
I remember them.
The armyworms kind of have like a reddish-brownish head, sort of greenish-blackish, stripy, striated body. But the biggest thing is the face on them, they've got an upside-down Y. So like the top of their head is the skinny part of the Y, and then it forks right below their eyes. So that'll be like a pretty distinctive yellow Y. And then they've also got like a stripe on their side, like a bright stripe, and then also the green-black sort of coloration. If you notice those window panes, pretty good indicator of armyworms. If you see that Y on their face, very good indicator it's an armyworm. But back to grubs, these things are kind of hard to identify. And a fun fact is, I call it a fun fact just because I know it now. People probably don't call it a fun fact. The grubs are really hard to identify because almost all grubs are just a little green, a little white C-shaped grub. It's a grub, and you say, oh, that's like a little grub. The way you identify grubs is with the hairs on their butt.
Wow.
So it's called the raster. It's like the end of their tail. It's where they excrement, and there's some shapes and some hairs and a whole situation there, but actually there's a pattern based on the type of beetle that it was, and you can actually tell them the difference that way.
And I thought there was just one kind of grub. I thought they were all the same.
There's a lot of grubs, but the ones we're probably seeing right now are going to be your May and June beetles, because they were all flying around May and June, and then now what do? They lay eggs, they start to get babies, those babies chew up our grass roots. So those are the biggest concerns. There's also a masked chafer, that's like a little brown beetle, but those are the two, the chafers and then the May-June beetles. They're going to be the big grass-eating pests right now. So, like I mentioned, they tend to eat on the grass roots, and which, you know, grass root movements are always good unless you don't have grass roots, because the grubs ate them all. And that's just what they feed on. They like nice, healthy roots. And because you always see the symptoms first or the signs first, I say, oh, well, the great way to tell for grubs in your lawn is all the grass is dead or spots of grass are dead. That could kind of mean anything, and people also claim everything's dead, even when it's not all dead. But usually, thin, brown grass is a good indicator. Taking that thin, brown grass, grabbing it like a wig and seeing if it pulls up, or you can also consider it like a carpet. If it lifts like just a piece of carpet that's not tacked down, you say, oh, aren't these things supposed to have roots on them? You'd be right. They're supposed to have roots on them. So when they don't have roots on them like that, if they just pull away easily, like a carpet, then that means, oh, the roots have probably been eaten, most likely, and that's probably going to be a grub issue. You can also go another step further and also verify yourself, too, by taking a shovel or a spade or something, digging down, looking at the soil. They tend to be about 2, 3, 4, maybe 5 inches deep. 5's kind of pushing it, but they also tend to raise up higher when it's moister, when it's easier to get through. They also tend to raise up higher when the grass is still nice and healthy, when they're still young and looking for food. As they get older, they tend to burrow down. They tend to stop eating as much. If it's too tight and too dry, they tend to be a little harder to find too. So if you're able to, you can water the ground a little bit. Take that shovel, stick it down, make a small hole, or even just a wedge. You can scoot over the grass a little bit, look for grubs, push it back over, redistribute. And like I mentioned earlier, those treatment options are going to be very similar. Obviously, almost anything in the lawn garden section of your insecticide department is going to say grub killer, grub getter, grub X, grub whatnot. I do tell people that chlorantraniliprole, big word, you can also call it grub X, but different trade names are going to be different. Different brands are not going to be grub X because that's Scott's. That's the one that's mostly a preventative. So that's the thing you put down early, probably right now, maybe even earlier, because you can never treat too early generally.
And so it's going to kind of, is it will actually percolate down into the soil, or is it just getting into the, you know, the grass itself and they're eating it?
Great point. So the things that you spray for armyworms, you're really going to want to target the grass and the crown of that grass, which is where the armyworms are. The things that are laying in the ground, like your grubs, you're going to use that same solution to spray the grass or at least coat the ground. And then you're going to want to water that in, because you need to water that lower into the soil profile, because unlike the armyworms, the grubs are literally underground. And if you're just spraying the tops, even if it's a pretty heavy spray, long spray, it still needs plenty of water to get down into the soil profile.
Gotcha. No, it makes sense. But yeah, that's one of those things that, you just don't often see unless you're actually, you know, tilling or something like that. Mm-hmm. You're probably not going to run into them.
But you'll probably see the dead grass first. Yes. And that's a pretty good giveaway. And if you want to know what kind of grub it is, I have a little chart that I kind of look at that tells me what kind of grubs they are. But that Grub X, that chlorantraniliprole, that's going to be like that preventative option, the early care step. The only one that I know about, Dilox, is the curative option. So typically, like I said, a lot of the older grubs, they dig down, they stop eating as much, they're ready to turn into pupa and then beetles eventually, which is their life cycle. They pupate over winter and then they turn into, maybe they stay as grubs over winter. I'm not sure. But then eventually they'll turn into those beetles, which are also annoying. But Dilox is going to be the one chemical that actually kills grubs. Like without a preventative application, that's going to be trichlorfan, which is also still one of those similar chemicals I mentioned with armyworms. But GrubX for prevention, Dilox for treatment. That's the way I tell people.
Very good. So another thing to just be keeping an eye out, especially. Now, the other thing is if people see their grass kind of turning yellow here, that also may just because it's hot, right?
Oh, absolutely. So Kansas has the benefit of living where it gets to 110 degrees in the summer and also below zero in the winter. So our temperature extremes are pretty crazy. And when you think about grasses, there's warm and cool season grasses. We have the benefit of needing both or having to deal with both of their issues. So things like your fescue, your blue grass, not blue stem. We also have blue stem. Those things are your cool season grasses that really want cooler temperatures, milder conditions. They can overwinter pretty green as well, which is a benefit. But if they're already stressed out by, say, bad soil, lots of clay, compaction, really bad nutrients sometimes, or a bunch of grub damage, that's when they start to really get green and brown and yellow and brown in the summer. So it can just be heat stress, but like I said, a great way to tell for grubs especially is pulling it up like a carpet.
Good tip on that. Well, Kenny, as we get closer to wrapping up here, any final thoughts or events that are coming up here for the Wildcat District?
Well, we are all dealing with fairs, or recovering from fairs, I should say. Crawford County wrapped up this weekend, which is great, or last weekend, I guess. Obviously, here in Coffeyville, we're prepping for the Interstate Fair and Rodeo. Monday is when most of the judging for indoor exhibits will be done, and then we've got shows and sales all week long. But on the non-fair side of things, there is a new to Medicare seminar. This is going to be a way to ask for information, understand how Medicare works if you're eligible for Medicare, or maybe even if you just don't want to know about Medicare, maybe you're a provider or a family member. It's going to be a seminar at the Parsons Research Center. That's in Parsons, Kansas. That's the top of the highway bypass. It'll be on August 17th at 5:30 p.m. You can call in to 620-331-2690. That's our independence number, and you can register that way. You can also call to any of our offices as well, but that'll be on August 17th at 5:30 p.m., just information for Medicare.
Very good. So are you going to be judging anything for the interstate?
I'll be helping out. I know they kind of condensed classes, so like this isn't like your county fair. They kind of made some new classes. It's open to both 4-H and open class, so essentially it's open class. It's not strictly bound by 4-H. I'm going to try to judge all the crops and the flowers, the garden stuff. Maybe I'll help out with the other stuff. We'll see. We'll see what they let me do.
Okay. Well, it's all coming up, and I encourage folks to check out those exhibits here next week at the Interstate Fair and Rodeo. Of course, we'll be out there starting Tuesday every night as well, so it'll be a good time. So hope to see lots of entries over there in the exhibit building.
Absolutely. Hope for a lot of good food, too.
Yeah.
They don't let me judge that.
Oh, man.
I know.
Maybe work on that. So. Yeah. All right. Well, Kenny, if folks do have questions and they want to get a hold of you, what's the best way to do that?
That same independence number, 620-331-2690. That is my home office. Please call them. If you call your local office, they can also patch you through to me. If you even call the Cherokee County office, they ask me questions sometimes about trees too.
Okay, very good. Well, Kenny, we appreciate it, and maybe we'll see you out at the fair.
I'll see you at the fair.
All right, that's Kenny Dodson with K-State Extension, and coming up next, we'll have our Words of Inspiration program get you into open line, and of course, we have Candy Westbrook joining us off of Business Over Breakfast here at 9:10. Lots coming up here on the Mighty 690.